US singer-songwriter Ben Harper, an artist well-known and much loved here in New Zealand, has a new album. It's called Winter Is For Lovers. It's just him and his lap steel guitar. Here's another track from it called Inland Empire. Ben Harper with a track called Inland Empire from his new album Winter Is For Lovers, released just this very day. And it's a tribute, the album, to the instrument he first fell in love with, the lap steel guitar.
That's correct. It's the one that drew me in the deepest.
Why, I wonder?
No, that's the question of the ages, why people get drawn to certain sound styles and instruments. I've always wondered that myself, but boy, yet from a young age, I knew it was the one.
Which one are you playing on this album?
On this album, I'm playing a Monteleone archtop lap steel made by John Monteleone in Islip, New York. It's been done. It was finished in the spring of 2017. And boy, I love that instrument so much.
They're not like violins in that the older they are, the better they are.
Yes, they are. Oh. Absolutely.
But this is a pretty much brand new one.
It's brand new, but with aged woods. And he's one of those rare makers that even straight out of the gate, the guitar for my ears, sounds top form.
How is it putting an album out without any lyrics?
It's different, Kim. And not only is it different putting it out, it was different recording it. Having it out in the world, it just seems, it seems aggressively fragile.
Yeah. In what way?
It's its own proclamation. It's not ducking around any corners, but it just feels sonically raw and fragile and just kind of a tap on the shoulder in a way to me.
Do you mean it feels that you're naked, you're stripped down?
Yeah, it's stripped down. It's exactly, that's exactly what it is.
I read that that while you were making it, or while you were conceiving it, you were reading David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest. So what could one hear about that book in your album?
That is the book that brought, well, in learning about how the book was written, informed the process of me writing and completing Winter Is for Lovers. Because once I found out Infinite Jest was a collection of, started as a collection of shorter stories being written at the same time, that he realized were actually part of the same story. Learning that is what brought to my attention that that's what I myself was trying to do.
So it made the whole album cohesive.
Yeah, very much so.
You have described it as exploring the American primitive movement. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, I actually didn't say that. My record company said
that. Okay, damn them. All right,
however,
you're on the spot.
But I support that sentiment in that the Windham Hill Tacoma sound is it has played an influence in my guitar playing and my musical taste. So Leo Kodke, John Fahey, Michael Hedges, those are guitar players I love and have greatly influenced me. So I stand behind the statement.
You've always said that you were an industry outsider, and I wondered whether you chose that position or whether it chose you.
It's been both. There are decisions that I've made that I knew would put me outside of the mainstream. And there's only so much shooting at a target that you can do before you have to either put up a different target or just aim it elsewhere.
You mean because you missed the target or you're bored with the target?
A combination of both.
I mean, you never missed the target on mainstream being the insider. I mean, Steal My Kisses put you right inside. Diamonds on the Inside put you right inside. So you must have chosen not to follow that route, which was a hugely successful one commercially for you.
Yeah, but the hits that I've had, Kim, were despite the circumstances. In other words, they were as much of a surprise to myself and the record labels, not to say that there wasn't a lot of work put into them, but then again, success is always a surprise in the music industry because there's been so many strikes and misses along the way to get there. But nonetheless, you know, at the time that Steal My Kisses came out, let me put it this way, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot of human beatbox on the radio at that time. You know what I mean? And there, with the time Steal My Kisses came out, the time Diamonds on the Inside came out, there wasn't a whole lot of pedal steel, country, blues, soul, rock on the radio at the time. So it always had to go against the grain and defy the odds to get any attention. I guess more to my point as well, as far as changing the target, the older you get, the further away that target gets. And I would rather stay close to a attainable goal then move further and further away from something that's as abstract as success tends to be in the music business.
Abstract or fleeting?
Both. There you go.
So you have been successful despite genuinely not caring about being successful?
I consider myself to be somewhat punk rock in that regard, but I'm not so punk rock that I don't care about whether something fails or succeeds, because it's a metric and it's an important one to stay consistent in, whether it be touring or being able to afford to make records that can have the potential to reach people. The reality of the metric crossed with just an inherent ambition prevents me from being that distant from whether or not things go well, or caring as much.
Two albums that people loved. I mean, all your albums people have loved, but with the two you made with Charlie Musselwhite.
Those were fun.
No Mercy in This Land most recently, and Get Up in 2013. How did you team up with him? How did you meet him?
I first met Charlie in the early 90s, maybe 93, 92. I was opening up for John Lee Hooker in San Francisco, and Charlie was in it, was playing alongside of him that night. And we just became fast friends, myself, Charlie, and John Lee.
Are you going to be doing any more work with him in the future? How is he?
Kim, I hope so. He just put out a great new record now this year that's out now. And yeah, I look for any opportunity. What was interesting is we made the record called Get Up. And then we went to make a second record and people said, why would you do that? Which I found to be incredibly insulting.
Why wouldn't you?
That's what I couldn't believe that became, you know how in the press things kind of just become a runaway train. Well, that was one of those things. People felt like I don't know. Maybe they felt like one was enough. I sure didn't feel that way. I'd love to keep making records with Charlie. I think he might even feel the same if I could be so bold.
It's interesting that there's always been white blues and great white blues like Paul Butterfield and Charlie. How do you feel? I mean, is there some kind of cultural appropriation that makes you feel slightly uneasy about it?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, listen, it seems as though we all got off on the same planet. You know, I mean, it's the hang-ups are the hang-ups, but they're not going to catch me, you know, because I'm black and white, so I don't have a horse in that race. I could care. You know what I mean? I mean, the thing is, people in American race is a different conversation than race pretty much anywhere else in the world. And we don't have to dive too deep into that because you probably don't want to hear my perspective on that anyway.
I would like to hear your perspective on that.
I mean, but people in America, they don't, let me put it this way. I mean, people don't even recognize their own roots really in America. You know, I mean, you're not American. You're not even white. You're Irish. You're German. You're Scandinavian. I mean, you know, to get hung up on black and white really seems like it's just wagging the dog in its own way.
Well, things are getting worse.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like people are in any hurry to get over it.
Especially not now.
Yeah. But that's, you know, explaining, but that's the thing. That's why when people look at me, you know, I may be black and white, but I'm black because I can't explain to them my heritage. They see a black man, I'm a black man. So since I've been born, people see a black man, I'm a black man. So as far as being black and white, I mean, Obama's the first black president. Is he the first half black, half white president? But he's the first black president because people can no more see that I'm mixed race than they can see their own cultural heritage being British and whatever other, you know, in Italian. Right. In America, that is. So if you can't see your own, if you need to be white that bad, if you need to be American white that bad, then there's not a chance in hell you're going to see me for being anything other than black. So black I remain and black I am proud to be. Amen on the permanent. But a dear friend of mine who is black as night took a DNA test and he's got Irish in him. He couldn't believe it. If you're going to get hung up on whether or not Stevie Ray Vaughan is the best blues player or not, like, you'll be hard pressed to find somebody more soulful and better. You want to find a better harmonica player than Charlie Musselwhite, black or white? What's the point? You know, I mean, you close your eyes, you're not going to know the difference. So I just figure, you know, for me to get tripped up in that conversation as far as race and blues, you know, if you don't want to hear white blues, you got a race issue yourself, you know, because I'm not up there worrying about, you know, again, we got off on the same planet. That's just all there is to it. And
When
with
you
the
were
way the
growing
world
up,
is right now, I think I got off on the wrong, I'm like, man, I got off on the wrong planet. People hung up on something that, you know, people get so caught up, you didn't have nothing to do with it. You have
when you
nothing
were,
to do with the fact that you're white. You got nothing to do. You were just
yeah,
born.
Well, that's right.
You just
but
got
when,
born.
When you were growing up at, in the legendary Claremont Folk Music Centre, the people who came, I mean, you mixed with really, really well-known legendary musicians. Was it a white scene, a black scene, a mixed scene? What was it?
It was both. It was
yeah.
multicultural. It was
Which
one of the
must have
rare
been...
places that celebrated cultures and celebrated just humanity at large.
Extraordinary place to grow up, I imagine.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. Then you think the rest of the world's like that. You step outside the bubble and here we are, you know. But it was an incredible upbringing in that way.
I really loved that album that you did with your mother, Ellen, by the way, Childhood Home.
Thank you. Thank you so much for hearing it. That's one of my proudest moments as well.
Yeah.
See, you know what I mean? And that's, you know, like I make records like that. Yeah, I could have been taken. Listen, I know how to write pop music. I do. You've heard it. I know how to write music that's had success on the pop spectrum. But I've always written what I was hearing in the moment. I've never made any attempts at anything else. And I think that has been my choosing. I could have hit the brakes and started crafting pop songs a long time ago and stuck to that and nothing but that. But I certainly wouldn't be here talking to you today about Winter is for Lovers if I did that. So the choices I've made have allowed me to make the choices that have kept me inspired.
Do you know Lenny Kravitz?
No, I've met Lenny, but I don't know him.
It's interesting because I've just been reading his memoir. And he talks about how Taj Mahal was influential in his life. He grew up and, you know, partly in California eventually and had a pretty interesting childhood. But Taj Mahal was influential in your life as well, right?
Very much so. Very much so. Taj Mahal was always, always a beacon of musical light and hope for me and always someone, just a permanent well of motivation and inspiration. And he gave me my first professional gig and was always a family friend. I mean, Taj knew my grandparents and my parents before I was born.
Mm. Also, Lenny Kravitz is both black and white. He had an African-American father African-American mother and a Jewish father. You were the other way around. Interesting mix, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I recommend it, but yeah.
Why wouldn't you recommend it?
Because there's a good amount of inner turmoil. I'm joking. Again, you don't choose it. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with being anything other than the choices I've been forced to make.
I mean, I suspect most marriages have a lot of inner turmoil and inner torment. I know you lost your father fairly early on.
Yeah, too early, that's for sure.
You've given up the booze.
Yeah, the booze is out.
Completely
the booze,
out.
The smoke's been out. But
I mean, the reason, that sounded like an awkward segue, but your father had a big alcohol problem. I don't know
yeah,
whether that's the reason
biggest,
you've knocked it on
one,
the head.
The biggest one I've seen.
The biggest one you've seen?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, you would have seen a few. That sounds pretty bad.
Yeah, it was pretty strange. And the reason it was worse than most is because he remained so vital and eloquent in his own way in the midst of all of it. To the very end, you'd almost have never known. Scary, scary how well he could conceal it. I mean, yeah, if there were Grammys for alcoholism, he would have had a shelf full.
You mean for functioning despite?
Yes.
So how did it kill him?
I mean, cirrhosis of the liver.
Yeah.
Right through his liver.
And is that why you've quit? I mean, you never struck me as having a serious problem.
Well, you see where I come from.
So you have to be aware of that kind of heritage.
Yeah, you wouldn't have known it. You wouldn't have known it. I'd have been all right. I could dust myself off by the next day and handle it. But you see things coming apart at the seams in the distance. And then never mind making choices about what kind of music I make or don't make. Making choices about, nobody can choose how they want to die, but you can choose how you don't want to die. And I did not want to go out like that. So I had to pull away.
So how is it?
It's the best thing I've ever done, bar none. And the thing is, a lot of people drink because they're running from something or smoke or do dry. I wasn't running from anything. I like the taste. I like the taste of alcohol. I like the taste of wine. I like the taste of beer. I like the taste of vodka. I like the taste of it. It's not all about, life isn't all about running from your pain at a certain point. But I just couldn't get enough of it. So it, yeah. And it didn't make any part of my life better. No matter how much I liked the taste, it didn't make any part of my life better at all. Quite the contrary. So, had to get as far away from it as possible. 3 years and 7 months in a few days. 2 days from now. 3 years, 7 months. And now it's as much about the streak as it is the drink. I don't want to drink and I don't want to break the streak.
No. What was it hard for you?
Very hard. Very hard. Because everyone around you is, you know, on permanent tip, right? So then you have to be the odd man out and get used to it. And also just your own cravings. So, but once you can get past the cravings, you know, a good friend of mine said, I called him, I was struggling with it in the first 6 months. And he said, you know, I was in New York, and New York's a real hard place to not drink. And he said, Ben, I'll tell you what, don't drink, just eat. Just eat, eat, eat.
So now you're enormously fat, but sober.
we don't even want to go there.
How's the skateboarding going?
Well, it tends to fight off the carbs, and it's what I love to do as much as I love to make music. I'm not getting the kind of time on the board as I'd like to right now. Thanks for asking, but I'll be back. It comes, you know, sometimes you got to step away from it for a second to get perspective. But when I'm back on the board, I know where I want to take it, or hopefully take it.
When do you think you'll be able to get back out touring?
I don't know. There was talk of 2021 and shows are booked, but it's up in the air, Kim. What's going on in New Zealand? Are people touring domestically there or no?
Yeah, there's we're beginning to come to life again. We're cut off. I mean, we're not having overseas people coming in because we've still got the quarantine and the border controls. We feel like we're getting back to normal a bit. Look forward to seeing you back in New Zealand again sometime soon.
Thanks, Kim.
That was Ben Harper, whose new album is Winter for Lovers.